You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 18th of November 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I just want to start today by continuing what we were talking about yesterday, about how there is this move to criminalise alternative information about COVID-19 and the vaccines, and at the moment it's aimed at the social media companies and trying to punish them, to get them to remove all competing information that competes with the government's official information on this. As I pointed out yesterday, the groups that are involved in doing this are the groups that are involved in campaigning against Islamophobia. And I didn't actually point any of those groups out yesterday. I didn't get the time to. So I just want to finish off on that subject first. Campaigners have dismissed Google, Facebook and Twitter's new commitments as meaningless and said most misinformation on the sites was still slipping through the net. Imran Ahmed of the non-profit company Center for Countering Digital Hate said from the beginning of the pandemic, social media companies have failed to live up to their promises to act against anti-vaccine misinformation, despite warnings that it could curtail a COVID vaccine. Now, what is the Center for Countering Digital Hate doing involved in this at all? This is a medical issue. This is a scientific issue. So why do we have this group being involved in it? Heidi Larson, director of the charity, said a small knock-on effect caused by conspiracy posts hinder the ability to achieve herd immunity through a vaccine, warning of a tipping point. And again, who is she to be saying this? She's the head of a charity that is supposed to be against hate speech. So what is her expertise on vaccines? As I pointed out yesterday, I don't know what to make of this. I don't claim to be an expert on medicines or on vaccines. I do know that we all have logos, though, as Dr. E. Michael Jones says, and we do have the ability of reason. We have logic, and we can look at information and using our common sense, we can usually work out whether something is being truthful or whether something is being deceitful. And what they're essentially saying here is we are all too stupid to make up our own minds. And surely, if they have only been working on this vaccine for under a year, the maximum knowledge that they have about this vaccine can only be its effects on somebody after a year. They have no idea what the effects are going to be long term. And these are probably the sort of things that people are pointing out and that it looks like the government want to remove them. We really need to have a debate about this. As I said yesterday, I would really like to see an expert who is pro-vaccines debating somebody who is anti-vaccine. So I think that would be a real coup for whatever alternative media network manages to produce that. But we really do need something like that. But the news about this actually gets worse. 4 out of 5 people in the UK want those who spread fake news about vaccines to face prosecution. Now, that is pretty shocking. And obviously, this would have been put to them. Do you think people posting harmful fake news, falsities about vaccines should face prosecution? Well, if you're trying to defraud somebody, That's against the law anyway, isn't it? If people are trying to defraud somebody. But I think the motives of the people that are questioning these vaccines, I don't think they're trying to defraud people. I mean, they're taking big risks, aren't they? They're taking risks that they could lose their social media accounts at the very least, or they could lose their jobs at worst. I mean, you've got the Center for Countering Digital Hate that are involved here that try to get people the sack, basically. Try to get people to lose their bank accounts. I mean, all the oppression that is targeted against political dissidents and nationalists is being targeted against these people that are against vaccinations. So they're not going to be promoting this idea because they want to defraud people, are they? They're promoting this idea because they believe in it. And who are the Center for Digital Hate to say whether something is fake or whether something is genuine, the information about these vaccines? They are not the experts. And yet the way this has been put to the public, according to this Daily Mail report here, 4 out of 5 people in the UK would like to see fake news about vaccines criminalised and people facing prosecution. So that's what they're pushing for, not just the social media companies. A survey of 2,000 people by ORB International for the Sunday Telegraph found more than half believe a vaccine produced in record time can be safe. Well, that means that 40% of the country don't believe it can be safe. And instead of answering that 40% of the country's fears, this group, the Labour Party, and I suspect they've probably got supporters in the Conservative Party as well, they just want to shut down the debate rather than actually having the debate. Those questioned were more likely to respond positively when asked to take a vaccine to protect their friends and family than to safeguard themselves. Well, that's good, isn't it? That shows that we still have this idea that we should put others' needs before our own, something which is getting broken down by multiculturalism, obviously. In a letter to the government, Labour's Jonathan Ashworth and Joe Stevens say online groups with hundreds of thousands of members are churning out disinformation. According to The Observer, they have offered to provide support for any vote in the Commons if the government agrees to work with Labour on new legislation. Very, very sinister, this, the groups that are involved in it, and the way that it will creep to criminalising people that could, you know, it could extend from vaccines to just alternative medicine, alternative information that is available on medicines. It's quite worrying what is happening here. And it also exposes the fact that hate speech is not about, the use of hate speech laws is not about protecting people's feelings. It's about shutting down debate, exactly the same as they're using the same people here that they use for trying to shut down debate about immigration. They're now using them to try and shut down debate about vaccines. Moving on to another news story that we have here, and it's actually centred around Plymouth. And we have a lot of listeners in the southwest. There's a young family that I actually met that listened to Radio Albion a while back. So I say a big hello to them. It sounds like they have quite a nationalist-minded city there in Plymouth, if we believe this article here. A council has been accused of being racist for trying to rename a Plymouth square honouring slave trader and naval commander Sir John Hawkins after the city's black football legend Jack Leslie. So what we have here, we have instantly the article is trying to smear the naval hero Sir John Hawkins by calling him a slave trader. It's quite obvious that the square was not named after him because he was a slave trader. It was named after him because he was a naval commander, and they want to change it to somebody who just kicked a football, basically. I mean, they call him a black football legend, but I don't think he actually did anything legendary. It's just the fact that he's black. That's why they want to change the name of this square. And in actual fact, when we look at witnesses from history, when we look at primary source documents, which means a document that was created at the time, we have to give more weight to primary source documents than we do with anything that's been written ever since. And this should apply to statues and naming of places. When they named this square Sir John Hawkins Square, it will have been shortly after his death. It will have been at the time that he died. And this shows you that at the time that he died, he was looked upon as a great hero. He certainly wasn't looked upon as a slave trader. So you shouldn't be able to change it now. You shouldn't be able to say 100 years later, we know better now than the people of the time did, because we don't know any better than the people of the time did. The witnesses of the time wanted to name the square after him. And this goes the same for all the statues that they're trying to pull down. The Edward Colston statue, I mean, that was put up at the time by people of Bristol that wanted to honour Edward Colston. And and they are the primary witnesses of the time. That shows you that he was a very good man. The people there who knew him at the time knew he was a very good man. How can they say 150 years, 200 years later, that we now know more about the man than the people did that actually knew him? You know, that argument about primary source documents, it should also apply to statues and all memorials of the heroes of our past. During the summer, Plymouth City Council proposed renaming Sir John Hawkins Square after the Plymouth Argyle player, who is the club's fourth highest goal scorer. He's not even the top goal scorer. He comes in fourth. So it's quite clear that the only reason they want to honour him is because he's black. Leslie, who played for the club in the 1920s and 1930s, was the only black professional footballer at the time and is believed to have missed out on a place in the England squad because of discrimination. Well, I certainly don't believe that. You're not going to miss out on the best player, are you? You want the best player. You can't say that they decided not to use him because he was black, because he was already a professional footballer. He was already playing football. So this decision to try and replace a hero who fought in the Navy with somebody who just kicked a ball around, it's quite clear that the only reason they tried to do this is because he's black. And probably one of only very, very few black people that were around in Britain at the time. So this ties in with this desire that they have to try and pretend that Britain has always been as diverse as it is now, which, of course, is a pack of lies. Britain was 99.9% white right up to the time of the Windrush arriving on our shores. The decision to replace the name of an Elizabethan slave trader, I mean, why don't they call him a naval commander? Why do they have to keep referring to him as an Elizabethan slave trader? I mean, just that shows you that the report is biased. The decision to replace his name on the square beside the city's magistrates' court followed the Black Lives Matter protests in the wake of the death of George Floyd in police custody in the United States in May. So this is basically just pandering. I mean, I don't know what the demographics of Plymouth are like, but I suspect there probably really aren't that many black people there. Certainly not enough to democratically want to change the name of this square anyway. But there were a number of objections, and Plymouth businessman Danny Bamping submitted an appeal against the decision, which was heard at Plymouth Magistrates Court on Friday morning. Thank you, Danny. Mr. Bamping, who once appeared on Dragon's Den, argued the decision breached national guidelines as it was racist because it was based on the colour of the player's skin in response to the Black Lives Matter movement. And of course, they will say black people can't be racist. But this is such an obvious racist decision. I mean, the guy came fourth as far as the goals that Plymouth scored. It's not like he came first in anything. It's not like he really put Plymouth on the map or anything like that. It's quite clear the only reason for this is because he's black. Mr. Bamping claimed the council had failed to comply with its own policy by not consulting about the change with the people connected with the square. And he argued it had also not properly consulted with Jack Leslie's family. That's the footballer's family. Mr. Bamping claimed the renaming decision was wrong and illogical because it did not take into account the full history of Sir John Hawkins, who was a Plymouth MP and played a leading role as a naval commander in the defeat of the Spanish Armada, at a time in history when slave trading was completely legal. So he hadn't done anything wrong at the time, and they want to penalise him now because something is now illegal, even though it wasn't illegal back then. Again, we can see where this primary source document logic comes in there. And this man was a member of parliament for Plymouth and a leading role as a naval commander, defeating the enemy, defeating the Spanish Armada. And it doesn't even... kicking a ball around doesn't even come to any close comparison to what Sir John Hawkins did. Mr. Bamping argued that many people did not want the name changed, including 54 who had even written to the court objecting to the decision, but their letters did not qualify as notices of appeal under the legal process. So we can see here that there's a lot of local support for keeping the square as the name that it is, but the council are just going to ignore that because they want to show how much they are, how anti-white they are, basically. That's all we can say, isn't it? They're very, very keen to show their virtues as being anti-white. He said that Jack Leslie's family should have been told that the renaming was a contentious issue and claimed the council had clearly not complied with the policy that a street name must not be considered racist. And obviously people are going to say, well, this is racist because it was based on the fact that the guy is black. And the family had obviously been told, oh, everybody wants to do this, because why would you want to have, why would you want a name to be changed if you knew that the general public that lived there were not going to be happy about it? There might be a chance that there would be graffiti put across the name, that people are going to think it's ridiculous. So again, I think what he is saying here is correct, but I believe the magistrates decided that he was in the wrong, unfortunately. He said the player's name was being used to appease a small minority who recognised Sir John Hawkins to be the first slave trader, which he was not, although he was involved in the slave trade. Mr. Bamping said, "We cannot judge yesterday's actions by today's morals." He had previously said, "The council has taken it on himself to rename the square purely on the colour of Jack Leslie's skin. He has nothing to do with the area, whereas Sir John Hawkins did a huge amount for Plymouth. Jack Leslie just kicked a football around 80 years ago." So Jack Leslie wasn't even from Plymouth, born in Plymouth, as they would say today. If he was born in Plymouth, he must be a Plymouthian. He's black. He's from Africa. And that's the only reason why they are wanting to change this square. Danny Bamping is correct here, where he says we can't judge yesterday's actions by today's morals. That's what is happening. We are projecting the way we are today onto the people of the past and then judging them as being deficient in some way. And what I'm saying is we can't do that because the witnesses at the time said that this was a very good man and they wanted to honour him. And we can't change that. We can't say we know better than the witnesses did back then. We know better than they did 200 years ago. I mean, that's just an impossibility. In June, council leader Tudor Evans said the council stood in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement, and it had already started the process of renaming Sir John Hawkins Square on the Barbican. So they don't stand with the Plymouthians then. They don't stand with the locals that don't want this changed. Kelly Greenaway, Jack Leslie's great-great-niece, was stunned that anyone would oppose renaming the square. Why would you want a square named after a slave trader? Imagine how some people feel walking past, knowing their ancestors were involved with that person, she said. Well, this is the point, isn't it? The square wasn't named after a slave trader. The square was named after a naval officer. And this is what people should be explaining. They should be pointing this out. This changing everything today because of our sensibilities today, it's absolutely insane. It's the same logic that ISIS used for tearing down the statues in Syria. They want to tear them down because they don't conform to a modern religion, a religion of Islam. And those statues there are from the past. And this is just changing the name of something. But it's trampling over all the ancestors of the Plymouthians that wanted to honour this man. And is Kelly Greenaway, she thinks her ancestors are more important, which obviously she would, because they are her ancestors. They are her black ancestors. But her black ancestors didn't build Plymouth, did they? Her black ancestors didn't defend Britain from the Spanish Armada. And the Plymouthians wanted to honour this man, and we should continue to honour him. And I'm very, very pleased that this Danny Bamping, this businessman who's been on Dragon's Den, that he's actually standing up for this. This shows us that this isn't a done deal. It's not the whole of the establishment that supports Black Lives Matter and all the rest of it. There are some among them who are speaking up for what is right. So thank you, Danny. Final article that I've got for us today. It's a repeat of a subject that just seems to do the round in the news every 3 months or so, about so-called right-wing extremism. A surge in online extremism at a time of COVID-related isolation has created a perfect storm for radicalisation, according to the UK's top counter-terrorism police officer. And this seems to be the only time that we actually hear of the top counter-terrorism police officer, is when we hear about this rise in far-right terrorism. And when the newspapers are usually reporting on this, they're actually referring back to a press conference that was given back in May of this year. And I've noticed this quite a few times now. When you actually check where their source of their quotes is coming from, it's coming from back in May. So it's basically the news companies, the news networks, that are trying to push this idea of there being a far-right terror threat at the same time as we're hearing of white people being beheaded by Islamic extremists in France. Metropolitan Police Assistant Commissioner Neil Basu has said growing numbers of young people in particular have been sucked in by the increase in hateful ideology online and set on a path towards violent extremism. And that's the source that they don't quote here, that I suspect comes from way back in May. And this news report comes from Sky News, because Sky News has a little 10-minute video out at the moment trying to warn people of the dangers of far-right extremism. I've had a look at the video, and it mixes together extremist ethno-nationalist imagery with the counter-jihad. And I've said for quite a while that it's a counter-jihad, it's your Tommy Robinsons, it's your Britain Firsts, that are actually the extremists. They're the ones that try to intimidate Muslims. Ethno-nationalists, patriotic alternative, Radio Albion, we don't seek to intimidate anyone at all. You know, we would condemn going into mosques and intimidating Muslims in the way that Britain First have done. And this video appears to show the counter-jihad, encouraging of people to do things like that. And obviously we completely condemn that. We want to be all about community building and preserving our heritage and supporting those in politics and in the establishment who do speak up for us, like this Danny Bamping that I just mentioned. He's the sort of person that we would like to support. It would be great if Patriotic Alternative could put forward some candidates for politics at some point in the future. But what we aren't about doing is intimidating ethnic minorities, which is really what they're on about here, I think. I think that's what they mean by extremism, because of course they never actually define what they mean by extremism. I think this causes problems as well, as we'll see later on here. AC Basu revealed that 17 children, some as young as 14, were arrested on terrorism charges in the past 18 months. And what we have seen is people with extremely violent memes that they have put out there, calling for the death of police officers or the death of royalty, that has been used as evidence that they had terrorist intentions. And I would say I'm not so certain that shows that somebody has terrorist intentions. But alongside that, they have also found people with weapons and bomb-making instructions and things like that. And that then you're on far more solid ground that somebody could have had terrorist intentions. So I would hope that none of our listeners would have any bomb-making information. And I would hope that none of our listeners would be sharing these violent memes either, because they will be used as evidence to show that you're a terrorist if you are. And I would certainly hope that youngsters don't have this. And this is a problem, because the youngsters see these memes and they think, oh, yeah, that's exciting. It's like the imagery that I see in my computer games. And if they get caught with that, then the police are going to say, well, this shows that you had terrorist intent. You know, we really, really, really need to reach out to these youngsters. And this is the problem, because Patriotic Alternative and us here at Radio Albion, we want to reach out to these young people and put them on a community building path, rather than telling them that there's no hope and they have to themselves physically get rid of the Muslim threat. You know, that's not the message we want to give them. But Patriotic Alternative will be portrayed in the mainstream press as if they're that sort of people, and that they're trying to groom youngsters into becoming extremists. And the truth is the opposite. We don't want youngsters to become extremists. We want them to become upstanding members of their community, doing what they can for their people and learning about the history of their people, so that they can educate others on our heritage. I mean, we're being attacked in just about every way you can think of as white people. We are being attacked, and part of that is our heritage. We need to preserve our heritage. We need to know the truth about our history so that we can illuminate others on the truth about our past and where we are heading. Over the same time period, more than 1,500 children under the age of 15 were referred to the Prevent Counter-Radicalisation Programme. We are seeing more young people being drawn towards terrorist activity, he said. That is a relatively new and worrying trend in the UK, because just a few years ago we were not seeing anyone that young amongst our casework. So why is this? Is this because there's actually been a creep in the parameters of what terrorism is, and that's why they're now seeing this? Don't forget, we have heard of youngsters being referred to Prevent just because they said they supported UKIP. Don't forget that just ethno-nationalism now sometimes gets accused of being extremist. So the actual parameters of what an extremist is have widened. And I think that's probably why they're seeing more youngsters. Obviously, we don't want to see youngsters becoming a part of the criminal world, basically. We don't want to see youngsters being criminalised. And by widening the remit of what they actually call an extremist, it means that, sadly, more youngsters are going to get criminal records because of this. Authorities launched a new website on Tuesday aimed at encouraging family and friends to report loved ones if they suspect they are being radicalised. The new Act Early site will provide advice, guidance and support for anyone concerned that someone they know may be at risk. And hopefully we'll get the time to have a look at that site, because I've had a look at that this morning. It comes as authorities reveal a worrying lack of engagement by families with the Prevent programme. Last year, just 2% of referrals to Prevent came from the family and friends of those suspected of being radicalised. Why might this be? I think it's because 98% of the people that are family and friends of these youngsters, they don't think that what they're looking at is actual extremism. This is the problem. I mean, what is their definition of extremism? They've probably got youngsters that are interested in patriotism. Maybe they're talking about traditionalism, and they're against drugs. Maybe they join the scouts and they get involved in litter picking, and they seem pretty good young people to the parents. And yet the school could then refer them to Prevent and say that they're extremists. I think that's the reason why these referrals aren't coming from the family and friends of those suspected of being radicalised, because they probably don't think that these kids are radicalised. And it's probably going to do more harm to them to have them then become a part of the system, as it were, than what the parents and their family and friends, they may just see as it's a phase that people go through. When they're young, they probably look at it and think, well, they may be a nationalist today, they may be a communist tomorrow. You just don't know with teenagers. They need to be more definitive about what they actually mean by extremism. Mr. Basu said the figure was unacceptably low and partly drove the decision to launch the new website so people could get help and support if they have concerns over the behaviour of someone they know. Well, the other problem with this is that they say, oh, if these youngsters are referred to Prevent, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get a criminal record, and it's all kept private. It's not kept private. I have seen young nationalists that have been in the newspapers, and the fact that they were looked at by Prevent has been covered in the news articles. What about their privacy? They need to work on that, because they say that it's, after I've had a look at this Act Early site, they say that the information is all confidential and all the rest of it. Well, if that's so, then why do we read in these news reports when you see nationalists being doxxed, you hear that they had been looked at by Prevent? So quite clearly, they've got some issues with their data protection there. For MI5 and Counter Terror Command at Scotland Yard, the vast majority of their work is still centred on the threat from Islamic extremism. So why have we got this article here going on about the rise in far-right extremism? Yeah, it's because, this is my theory anyway, it's because they don't want to appear racist or Islamophobic for going after the jihadis. And obviously, as it says here, the vast majority of their work is still centered on the threat from Islamic extremism. Islamic extremism makes up something like 99% of the terrorist attacks in the world. But if they were to divert 99% of their resources against Islamic extremists, they would be accused of being Islamophobic, wouldn't they? So this is the reason for this, I believe, is to prevent those accusations. So they go after young nationalists and pretend that there is some kind of equivalency between them putting stickers up and jihadis beheading teachers in France. But Mr. Basu has warned the threat from far-right extremism is growing rapidly, adding that 10 out of the 12 under-18s who were arrested for terrorism last year were linked to extreme right-wing ideology. Well, again, that's not such a good thing then, is it? If the majority of the threat is coming from Islam, why were 90% of the under-18s arrested last year to do with the extreme right-wing ideology? Shouldn't the government's resources and the law enforcement resources, shouldn't they have been 90% of them been directed at Islamics rather than being directed at young right-wing supporters? Mr. Basu said there has definitely been a growth in nationalistic material online, white supremacist literature, things that are extremely disturbing. Again, he doesn't really define what these things are. White supremacist is now really just an insult, isn't it? It's just a slur that's used. And why is nationalistic material, how can that be deemed as extremist in any way? I mean, every other country in the world that isn't a white country is a nationalist country, and it has an ethno-state. It's only over here in Europe and in white countries that we don't actually have ethno-states anymore, but we always did have for thousands of years, for millennia. So it really can't be that they are describing as extremist. It must be something else. The terrorist threat level in the UK was raised to severe earlier this month following a wave of terrorist attacks in France and Austria. And again, they were Islamic terror attacks, weren't they? Not far-right ones. There is no specific intelligence of a threat to the UK, but authorities fear that the increase in online radicalisation during lockdown means many more people are willing to consider using acts of violence. Well, let's have a look at the Act Now website. We've got a couple of minutes left here. And it has to spotting the signs. And these are signs that family and friends can watch out for if they think somebody might be a far-right extremist. It says being influenced or controlled by a group. And we are all influenced by our social contacts. We're all influenced by a group, but it's certainly not good to be controlled by a group. I mean, that is a red flag, isn't it? That is a warning sign. You don't want to be controlled by a group. You want to be making your own decisions, and you want to be well-informed enough to know that you're making the right decisions. So, you know, this is a sensible sign for parents to watch out for, isn't it? Somebody being controlled by a group and not being able to have their own say. An obsessive or angry desire for change or something to be done. Again, this is a good thing to watch out for. Not good to be obsessive about things, and anger clouds the mind, and it will prevent you from thinking logically. And also this drive, somebody's got to do something. That is exactly the mentality that gets people into trouble. And we've said this so many times here at Radio Albion, this somebody's got to do something mentality. You're not going to be able to change everything on your own. You're just not going to be able to do that. What we can do is improve the lives of our people in our communities. But going out and doing some stupid attack on some non-whites is not productive in any way, shape or form. So this is a good red flag to watch out for, people like that. Spending an increasing amount of time online sharing extreme views. And again, it doesn't define what these extreme views are. And when you think back to the military's example, they had a list of things that they described as extreme. Patriotism was one of them. Just patriotism, just loving your country, was seen to be an extreme view. So they need to define this more. Personal crisis. If somebody is going through a personal crisis, again, that could lead them to be a little bit unbalanced, couldn't it? And maybe they could be taken advantage of by somebody that was trying to get them to carry out some kind of an attack. And of course, we have had instances in the past of these undercover intelligence operatives trying to encourage people to carry out these attacks. And we're often told that the people that carried them out had some kind of mental problem or were going through a personal crisis. Need for identity, meaning and belonging. And this is a really interesting one. Everybody has a need to belong. Everybody wants some meaning to their life. And the only reason why people need an identity is because our identity has been stolen from us, hasn't it? As white people, as white British people, our identity as being British has been taken from us and given to Africans, Indians, Chinese, Pakistanis. Anyone that sets foot on our soil is handed our identity. So to say that this is a red flag, somebody feeling a need for identity, I mean, what they're pretty much describing here is everybody white has a need for identity, meaning, and belonging. So that's perhaps not such a good red flag to be looking out for. The next one, mental health issues. Of course, very, very sensible. I mean, these things here are things for nationalists to look out for as well. I mean, the sort of people that show these character traits are going to be a threat to the organisation. They're going to be a risk to the organisation because they could do something silly that would get the organisation into trouble. Looking to blame others. And again, that this is a legitimate problem within nationalism, is groups seek to blame other groups, seek to blame ethnic minorities, seek to blame Jews. And as we so often point out here at Radio Albion, the only people that we have to blame for the situation we are in is ourselves. If you're going to be blaming these other groups, you're effectively saying, well, we are so weak and pathetic that we can be taken over by groups with a low IQ, or taken over by a group that make up less than 1% of the population. It's pathetic. Don't blame these other groups. You have to take responsibility for the situation we are in. We have to take responsibility for it ourselves if we want to do anything about it. And again, if a group is trying to blame others, then yeah, that could be a red flag. You know, some of these red flags are sensible for parents and friends to be watching out for. Desire for status and a need to dominate. Well, if you feel a need to dominate those around you, again, that's a character flaw, isn't it? And it's going to be dangerous to the organization or amongst your group of friends. You don't want people that have a desire to dominate around you. I mean, leaders don't just announce they are leaders. Leaders are leaders because they have supporters and the supporters nominate them as leaders. Somebody that is showing this desire to dominate, a desire to have the status, then they don't deserve to be leaders, really. And I mean, this is a problem, a wider problem with the way that our democracy is. A lot of the people that actually get elected are the worst sort of people because they have this desire for power. But again, and that's the last of their red flags here. And they're quite sensible red flags on the whole to look for, as in character flaws in somebody. But I guess basically what they're saying there with this Act Now website, with these signs, really they're quite sensible, aren't they? They're not saying somebody who likes UKIP or somebody who speaks up for whites, they may be extremists. They are actually pointing out character flaws, which we do see in the type of people that go out and do silly things. Anyway, we've gone a little bit over time here, so thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.